And welcome to Outbeat Radio on KRCB Windsor Santa Rosa, a program that focuses on issues by, for, and or about members of the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender communities. You can hear Outbeat Radio every Sunday night at 8 p.m.
This is Living Proof, and we're your hosts. I'm Dr. Diana Grayer, and next to me is my co-host and wife, Sheridan Gold. Haha. Tonight in studio, we have Martha Salazar and her fiance just of 2 weeks ago, Christina Rivera. So welcome you two. You can find Martha at the Stepping Stones Books and Gift Shop and Center for Spiritual Living in Santa Rosa. And she's also the special events coordinator at the center as well. And Christina.
Yes, thank you for being here, Martha. Christina Rivera, is so nice to have you both in studio tonight. Christina is a mom, and her son is 22 years old, Brent, and he's in college right now. And Christina is in the process of changing careers, so we're going to get to know a little bit more about that when we return from our news and events from our friend and engineer, Greg Moralia.
Change the world.
This is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio News for the week of January 6th, 2019. This year, Canada will mark the 50th anniversary of that country's decriminalization of homosexuality and the 50th anniversary of Stonewall by minting a new dollar coin. The Canadian dollar coin will receive a new design on the reverse of the existing coin, and the design was approved by current Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. This is fitting, given it was Trudeau's father, Pierre Trudeau, who introduced the 1969 amendments to Canada's criminal code. These amendments decriminalized same-sex relationships throughout the country. Justin Trudeau followed in his father's footsteps, apologizing for past acts of the government against LGBTQ Canadians and allocating up to $110 million Canadian to compensate those affected by the government's gay purge. The coin's design was approved by the government on December 14th and will go into production very soon. And here in the U.S., last week the new Congress was sworn in, and Democratic Virginia Congressman Jennifer Waxman is starting off her first term on the right foot. One of her first orders of business was to hang a transgender flag outside her Washington, D.C. office door. Waxman is the aunt of a transgender child and the first congressperson to hang this flag. She told the Washingtonian, quote, "The trans community has been under attack. I wanted to show my solidarity because we are talking about my friends and family," end quote. And as the first session of Congress got underway, a new set of rules was passed by the House of Representatives that includes protections for LGBTQ congressional staffers. On their very first day in power, congressional Democrats passed a rules package that addressed issues that concern the House of Representatives itself. And the rules bar representatives and employees of the House from discriminating based on sexual orientation and gender identity. The LGBT Congressional Staff Association praised the measure. The rules were approved by a vote of 234 to 197, with mostly Democrats favoring and Republicans mostly opposed. But the news wasn't all good last week. On Friday, a federal court ruled in favor of the Trump administration in one of four cases being heard, the right of transgender people to serve in the military. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia threw out a lower court decision in Doe v. Trump that banned the military from implementing the ban while the case was being heard. The lower court ruled that because the transgender military ban likely violates the Constitution, it could not be implemented while the court decides whether it is unconstitutional. In March of 2018, the Trump administration issued what they called a new transgender military ban. A district court ruled earlier that the 2018 ban was just a means of implementing the 2017 ban and maintained the injunction against it. But the appeals court said they were wrong. A three-judge panel said this is because the 2018 ban, quote, appears to permit some transgender individuals to serve in the military consistent with established military mental health, physical health, and sex-based standards, end quote. For Outbeat Radio News, I'm Greg Moralia.
And welcome back. This is Living Proof with Diana and Sheridan, and I am Sheridan. And in studio, we have two special guests, Martha Salazar and Christina Rivera. And welcome, both of you.
Thanks for having us. Thanks for inviting us.
Yes. You're welcome.
Yeah. So let's get the audience all caught up on that engagement.
Well, it was a special night, and it was at our staff holiday party at the Center for Spiritual Living. And what we do is we have a dinner, and then we go into the chapel to have a raucous elephant, white elephant gift opening party with 30 of my colleagues and their partners and spouses. And so Edward, our senior minister, kind of, you know, opens up the evening by saying a few words. And then he said, "And Christina has something she'd like to read." And I'm sitting there thinking, well, that's a little odd and out of place. So she stood up and started sharing about the love that her grandfather had for her grandmother, and where this ring that I'm now wearing came from, and that her grandmother wore it for 60 years and then continued to put love into the ring for an additional 20 years after her grandfather had passed on. So there's a good 80 years of love in this ring, which I love, and I'm honored to wear it for that reason. So Christina was sharing about the family history and the love, and I'm thinking, well, this is kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. And I'm still sitting there, and she's standing up and talking about her love,
which
and
is
her
totally uncharacteristic for me.
Very. She's a little more shy and introverted than that, especially in front of my colleagues. So then she continued on sharing the story of when her grandmother passed, which was about 4 months ago, and I was there with her. We were sort of caring for her during her end of life stages, and when her grandmother did pass, it came time to prepare the body for burial, and nobody wanted to do that. Nobody was able and felt comfortable doing that. And so Christina went into the room to do that, and she's sharing the story to the group. Mm-hmm. And she said she looked up, and I was standing there, and that's when she knew that she wanted to marry me. And I still was clueless that this was headed into a proposal. And so I'm sitting there thinking, well, this is a sweet story. And then she held out her hand, and I stood up, and I'm thinking, well, she wants me to stand next to her while she's continuing on with the family history. And it wasn't until she kneeled down that I finally got that, she's going to propose. And Edward took a video of this. And in the background, you can actually hear someone saying, uh-oh.
and you can see everybody crying.
Yeah, everyone was crying. And so she proposed right then and there in front of everybody. And, of course, I said yes. And I was so taken back. I just was not prepared for this to be happening that night.
Well, that was the only way. I mean, honestly. I mean, there was a lot of backstory, you know.
What's the backstory?
Yeah, well, the backstory is months before that, I'm thinking about, this is the person I want to marry, right? I'm having these feelings, and I'm kind of wanting, I mean, we're living together, so I'm thinking, you know, I mean, I don't think she's going to say no, but in the back of your head, you're going out on a limb, right? I mean, anybody could say no. And so we're sitting on the couch at that night, and I'm kind of hinting along about marriage. And she turns to me and she says, you know, she says, if you think I'm just going to marry you, it's going to take a proposal. And I'm like, okay, we're just going to drop this right now. Because now now if I propose, she's going to say I propose because she asked for one or something. So I just waited. And the backstory is that I wanted so badly to propose in a safe place. And I'm not a person that ever thinks about stuff like that, really. I mean, I choose to walk through my life just as if everybody is okay with, you know, us. I just choose not to think about it because I'm not an activist kind of person, and I just want to go through my life just normal. In that situation, because I wanted it to be so perfect for her, I've been married once before to a man, my son's father. I just wanted it to be so perfect. And I wanted to make sure that there was going to be an environment where everyone could be happy for us. And so in my family, we just kind of choose not to talk about the things that are difficult to talk about and uncomfortable. But in this instance, I actually reached out to my, because we had a family gathering coming up, and I thought, well, I could ask her at this family gathering. That would have been my first choice, or what I thought was my first choice. And so when I sent out a text, and I just asked my brother and his kids, told them I was thinking about proposing to her like at Thanksgiving, and how would they all feel about that? It was interesting because some people chose not to respond at all. One person chose to be very direct and say, Auntie Chris, I don't think that's a good idea. And I think it goes against our beliefs, and you put us in an awkward position, and, you know, it just, I don't think it's fair for you to put us in that position. You know, we love you and you can do what you want, but we shouldn't have to bear witness to it, so to speak.
But they knew Martha, right? No,
they knew Martha. They'd met her. My parents, I had a direct conversation with them. It was very touching. They even went so far as to go talk to their minister because they wanted to figure out a way that they could be okay with it. But we're of different faiths and different belief structures. So my dad basically said, you know, the last thing I want to see is Martha's feelings be hurt, or for her to in any way feel anything hurtful. And, you know, can't you guys find someplace else where you could, I'm sure you have friends and stuff that you could ask her in front of them, and everyone could be happy for you.
And so it really was the perfect place.
It did turn out to be the perfect place.
By people that love us and accept us unconditionally, and people that we love. And so it was a perfect place. And I really was sort of adamant that I wanted a proper proposal, because I never have been proposed to. I've never been married, so I wanted on the knee kind of thing, and that's what I got.
And I had the opportunity to actually be the one to get on my knee, which was like so. I mean, I got to be the proposer, which is, I mean, some butch side of me really enjoyed. It was really amazing. It ended up being absolutely perfect in the perfect place, and she was so surprised.
Surprised is a good word.
So surprised. And I had been holding all of it in, and I'm not one to hold stuff in. I usually have to just spill the beans right away. So the fact that I had to hold all of that in for like from Thanksgiving all the way to the middle of December when I did that, and not tell her all the backstory that was happening. And I was texting my son, and I was like, oh my God, you're not going to believe what so-and-so said, and what am I going to do? But I ended up going to our minister as well and saying, you know, can you, because I was hurt that my parents couldn't just even say, you know, we're happy for you, or, I mean, like they could say, everybody deserves somebody, and we're happy that you found somebody, but we just don't understand it. And then they said they didn't know if they could come to our wedding. And I was just like, oh my gosh, how could, really? And I still don't believe they're not going to come. I think that they're going to figure out a way to work it out in their own hearts to be able to come. And, you know, they can just not look when we kiss or something. Right? I mean, something like that.
But regardless of whether they're able to come, we're loving them anyway. And we're going to love them through this because they're our family. And they're important to us. And
absolutely.
So we respect and honor their belief systems, even though it's different than ours. And it's
and we don't understand it.
And
you know, I mean, honestly, we're in the same boat. We don't totally understand how their belief system could say, do this
to, you know. In our minds, it's limiting, yet it's their belief structure. Mm-hmm. So we're not asking them to give that up for us. We just want to be loved in the way that they've been loving us.
Well, I was really taken with Christina, with your father's response. We don't want Martha's feelings to get hurt.
Right.
I mean, that is loving.
Absolutely.
As much as he could in the moment.
And that's what our minister said. You know, our minister said, I had to leave. I had to move to a whole other continent to get people to love and accept me. So and they went so far, they put enough effort into it that they even went to their minister and say, hey, how can we make this work? Mm-hmm. And what more could you ask for? I mean, that they're making the best effort they know how. In that respect, I mean, I'm touched. You know, it just took a minute for him to say it that way, for me to get over myself, basically. Mm. And no, it's not coming in the way that I want it, but they're coming in the best way they know how, and in complete effort.
And her dad has become a father figure to me.
Nice.
My father died when I was 6 years old, and he's been the closest thing to a father since then. And my dream is to have him walk both of us down the aisle. Now, that may or may not happen, I will ask him at some point. If he's able to do it, it'll be a beautiful thing. And if he's not, I understand.
Mm-hmm. When are you all planning to have your wedding?
Well, we have a lot going on this year.
a lot going on.
Her son graduates in May, and Christina is starting Empire College in February. And so we want to get through these big events first and then make the time and space.
That makes total sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you have time to work on Dad.
Yeah.
But right. I really want to say, you know, shout out to you, respect. I mean, the way, the process of you going to talk to your family, you know, because this is a huge deal in your life. And you were able to talk to each member of the family to gather around.
I tried.
What you want. I mean, yeah, but that's...
It was uncomfortable. And the thing is like the ring, my mom had the ring, right? It was my... when my grandma was on her... In the last few days, she was still very cognizant, and she told us the story. Martha was there, of her and my grandfather's meeting, and she told it in a way that, I mean, she still blushed when she was talking about their meeting, and it was like she was right there in the moment. And so we heard the whole story. So that's where I came up with the idea that I wanted this ring. I mean, you know, you can see it's not a super fancy ring. It's just a tiny little, you know, gold band that from, you know, the 20s or something that my grandfather, you know, gave to her. That was their original wedding band. And, but my mom, you know, for me to ask her, can I have that? Can I use that? She kind of stumbled for a minute and then she said, well, okay, let me go down and see what, because I knew what size Martha was. And she goes, let me go down and have it sized and see. And it was going to need to be made smaller. When my mom came down to visit us to bring the rings, my mom brings all of these rings she brought. So my mom is having trouble. She can't say congratulations on your engagement or any of that. She can't really speak it out loud. She can't say, oh, this is Chris's girlfriend or this is her partner. She can't say that. She'll say, this is Martha, Chris's friend. But she could bring every ring that she had, and some of them had diamonds, but that was the way she could show up. And that was the way that she could offer her as much approval or as much support as she possibly could. And for me, I mean, it makes me want to cry, you know. It's not what I want completely, you know. It's not that total acceptance, but yet it's they have come so far. I mean, this is the first relationship that they've actually, of mine, since I came out when I was 30, that they've actually been able to embrace and accept me having a partner. And so they've come a really long way.
Were you out with your family as soon as you came out yourself? And how long ago was that?
I came out after my son was born, and after my husband and I were divorced. And I mean, I knew I was gay as a youngster. I just wanted so badly to have what my parents had. That's what I wanted. I wanted to get married and marry someone like my dad and be married forever and have a family. I mean, that's what I wanted. The only problem was that in my mind's eye, I mean, it was always a woman, you know, but I tried to make it normal. And so the one thing I knew whenever I got married the first time, when I asked myself, is there anything I haven't done that I should do before I get married? The only thing, or that I might regret, the only thing I could think of was I hadn't been with a woman. So, but I really wanted a baby, you know. So, you know, we got married, I had a baby. It didn't work out, and he went his way, and so I got what I wanted. And then I'm like, when it was over, I thought, well, okay, well, this is a sign. Here we go. Mm-hmm. So, and I came out at that time, and my parents were not supportive of that. In fact, at that time, they're Christians, and they're very pretty staunch believers in the Bible. And at that time, they were very heartbroken, and there were passages from the Bible that they put out, you know, basically that I just couldn't even begin to think, how could these people think that believe in something that was going to say, you know, that I could be harmed because of my sexual orientation or something. So they've come a long way, and so have I. Mm-hmm.
So you mentioned heartbroken. So they're heartbroken because you're coming out, that too. But what about the divorce? You leaving and separating?
I didn't leave him. He had an affair. That's how that happened. I think they may have been heartbroken about that ending, maybe. But I think the big heartbreak really was that I wasn't who they thought I was, basically. Right? And they didn't understand it. They just don't understand it. And I think that if I didn't have my son at that time, the distance between us would have been a lot bigger. But because, I mean, they loved him and they love me, you know, but they wanted, to have that contact, and I wanted them to have that contact. That really got us through the tough years.
Wow, there's a lot there. I'm just kind of feeling into, you know, your relationship with your parents. And I'm curious, Martha, about you. Your dad died when you were young, but your mom, what's your relationship?
She died also about 5 years ago. Oh. I came out in my early 20s. And at the same time, my brother was coming out and my aunt was coming out. So there was a family thing happening. And so it was sort of a beautiful thing because we were all in support of each other. Mm-hmm. And my family never had an issue. It just was never an issue. I was totally accepted and unconditionally loved no matter what. And that was clear from the very beginning. And so it's, you know, at times challenging for me dealing with Christina's family in this way. But the thing about her family is when I got together with Christina, it was a package deal. I got a son and I got a set of parents and I got some grandparents and some extended family. And a lot of my family has died. And so I'm left with, you know, very little. So I was very happy about that. So I know I'm loved and I love them, and it's nice being part of a family.
You two are just such big spirits. I mean, it's like not a little bit of upsetness. I mean, you know, it's like you just accept people for who they are, and I know you want people to, you know, to do the same. You want people to accept you as well, but it's just, wow, not even a little bit of bitterness or...
I mean, maybe in the beginning, of course, you know, whenever someone's underlining passages of the Bible and saying, you know, God may come down and hurt your child because of your choices. That was my snapping point, kind of. At that point, I'm like, really? Mm-hmm. Like, you really believe that? Like, really? Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's a God that you choose to believe is going to save you, right? That I struggled with that, and I cannot deny that I had some hostility about that for sure. Mm-hmm. But I mean, that was 20 something, you know, 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And you can't just walk around with it. I mean, they're my parents, and as I've gotten older, there are people, and we're going to be their people, you know, as we live the closest in proximity to them. Last year, my mom had a health scare, and my dad called quickly and needed me to come up. And at first, I told Martha, I'm going. I got to go right now. And I didn't really know what was going on. And I know that she was a little bit upset because she said, well, wait a minute, and I'll go with you. And I said, no, I'm just going to go, and I'll let you know. And it was more out of, because I knew that my dad called. You could tell he was super upset. There was something, and he's like, I need you to come right now. And I knew it was, you know, an hour and a half drive or whatever. And part of the reason I didn't take her right then is I didn't know what I was walking into. And I didn't know their level of comfort with her. Like, if my dad was crying, and that's not like him. So I didn't want her to be subjected maybe to him or my parents being in a really vulnerable place and what might be said. I didn't want her feelings to get hurt. You know, like, why is she, you know, not that I think they would have done that, but I just wanted to be sure that everyone felt respected. And as soon as I knew what was happening, then I called her and she did come. And it turned out that actually I ended up leaving her. My mom ended up being hospitalized. Then I had to go up and deal with my grandmother further north, and my dad was staying there. I ended up leaving Martha there to man the ship with my parents. And that turned out to be a super positive bonding time for you guys.
I think it was a turning point in our connection. Her dad asked her mother, what can we do to support you? What would help you the most right now? And her mom said to get my office organized. And I'm like the queen of organization. So
word.
So so during the day, I was helping her mother, just sitting with her, and supporting her and helping in a gentle way, helping her get her office organized. And when her mother needed, you know, time to kind of sift through files and go through papers, I would go outside and stock wood or work outside. They have a ranch up there. It's in Willits, and it's God's country for sure. And there's always something to be done on this, what, 15-acre ranch. Mm-hmm. So we love going up there and helping our parents, and we work. And I worked. I was up there for 4 days, and I was working outside and working in the office. And we'd come in for meals and go to bed and then get up in the morning and do it all over again. And I think something shifted.
My dad called me when you were there working, and I was up north helping my 94-year-old grandmother, who was in needing help as well, my dad's mom. And I said, "How's it going?" And he said, "One thing I can say," he goes, "Martha has really worked her butt off." She has really, and for my dad, it just takes evidence. Of all people, Martha has continually showed up and supported them. And the same thing happened when my grandma was ill at the same time. And my mom leaned on you a lot at that time, too. I mean, Martha wrote the obituary that went in the paper, and she was there in the final days. I was there like 2 weeks leading up. I was the dosing medicine queen while we were there. And my dad called the night before that my grandma passed away and was talking to me on the phone, and he was super emotional. And he was talking about Martha, you know, and how much, you know, he loves her and he loves us, and how much we've helped them. And he was just so grateful, you know, that we had taken such a load off for them, and it gave them the opportunity just to be able to have their grief.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, I think part of the definition of family is showing up when it's the hardest. And I think we've really been able to do that in these last 4 years. And they see that and they acknowledge that.
That would be a really great thing to write on a flyer or postcard and secretly give it to your father.
What would it be?
Well, showing up for family even when it's hard would mean, even though it's hard, come to my wedding and walk me down the aisle. I was there for you. Can you be there for me?
I think with my dad, I don't think we're even going to have to, like, even, you don't even have to paint that picture. I think we just, you just keep
being great.
You just keep showing up on your side and not let him, not say anything about what he needs to be doing on his side. Mm-hmm. You know, just mind your side of the fence and keep showing up in the way that you want to see mirrored on the other side.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
And that, I think that's what's important. You know, I mean, my parents are coming down this week to help us. We're in the process of doing some work on our house, and you know, they're coming down and staying for a week before they leave for the desert to help us work. That's awesome. What we do. We don't, but with them, we don't give Christmas presents or anything. We just gift hours of labor back and forth.
Wonderful. Yeah. So we're going to break for some music. The title of the song is like so appropriate for what we're talking about. Martha, would you please introduce the song and why the name of it and why you brought it tonight?
The song is Beautiful World by Kem. And the significance of this song is when Brent graduated from high school, I put together a video of pictures that I captured from his Facebook page. And I put it together with music. And this is the song that I put it together with. The song captures the essence of who Brent is. He's a beautiful man. And it also captures the essence of our love for him. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. That's why this song is so important to us.
Enjoy.
Whatever will be, it will be. Won't let the weight of this world bury me. I
want a place in the sun. Come whatever one may, it is done. Will you walk out on water? Will you breathe on heaven's door? Will you leave a path to follow the beautiful world?
Just joined us. This is Living Proof with Diana and Sheridan, and again we have Christina Rivera and Martha Salazar in studio with us tonight, and they have been talking to us about their story of getting engaged and being proposed to and proposing, and it's been a lot of fun getting to know your story, both of you. So we were curious during the break, like, how did you meet? And maybe from each person's perspective. Martha, you want to?
We were at an Out West dance. It's an LGBTQ dance in Sebastopol, and they do country dancing, and they give lessons, and every once in a while they'll have line dancing. So this particular evening they were doing line dancing, and so it's not partner dancing, you're just all in lines. And I noticed that Christina was new there. I had never seen her there before because I was a regular there at this particular dance. So we were doing these line dances and we were kind of grooving into the same dances, and energetically we were sort of connecting in just, you know, through the airwaves there.
Yeah.
And the last dance that Joy played was a two-step, and I thought, this is my moment to try and connect with this woman. So I asked her to dance, and we kind of stumbled through a two-step, and I never asked her name or anything. And so I'm thinking, gosh, how, you know, after the dance, I'm thinking, how am I going to connect with this woman?
You asked me my name. I think I had
I may have asked you your first name. So after the dance, I just happened to notice that she commented on a friend of mine kid's Facebook post.
Stalker.
And so I thought, oh, well, there she is. So I sent her a Facebook message inviting her out for coffee. And I was clear, if she's not attached, would she like to go out for coffee with me? And she said, well, she's just attached to her son. And so it's like, okay.
Truth.
And we set up a time to meet for coffee in Guerneville, and she ended up injuring herself at work. So she canceled at the last minute. And then later in the evening, she ended up calling and inviting me to a movie. So that's kind of how it got started.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, Christina.
The other side.
Well, it is true. It is true that I got hurt at work, and I called and I canceled. And it was so funny because she said she was just getting ready. I was just getting ready to iron my T-shirt. And I thought, iron your T-shirt. So I canceled. But then later in the evening, I'm thinking, God, I'd really like to just go to a movie. But it felt kind of weird. Like I would cancel the date, right? And if I'm going to go to a movie, that would be kind of like, I don't know, dishonest or something. But I actually just wanted to like go in my pajamas or my sweats or something to the movie, you know, with your Uggs on, and you just kind of, you know, stumble out to the movies. So I thought, well, let's see how game she really is. So I call her up and I say, hey, you want to go to a movie? I said, I feel like going to the movies. How about we go to the movies in our pajamas? And she's like, she goes, no way. I said, well, what about sweats? She goes, I don't own sweats.
Oh, my goodness,
she goes,
Martha.
She goes, how about this? How about I'll come and I won't iron my T-shirt?
Oh,
I was like,
stretch, huh?
Even if I did own sweats, I wouldn't be wearing them out in public. I just had a different kind of standard of dress back then.
Yeah, she owns sweats now. That's for sure.
So we sat and talked before the movie and after the movie, and we went out to our car and talked some more. And she was very clear that this was the year she was launching her boy, and she was getting him ready for college. And
he was the priority.
And it was helpful to know that from the beginning. I got it, that her son is her number one priority.
Yeah, it was important to me that I was just really clear. I mean, to be completely truthful, I wasn't really ready to get into a relationship. This is my thing. I mean, he's a first generation college student. It's everything that I have ever wanted for him and for our family, for him to go to college and graduate. And that was my mission. So I was open to dating, but she just needed to know that whatever was happening with him, and I was in overwhelm anyway with, you know, college tours and all that, that he just needed to come first. And she, I think it was hard for you to some degree.
It wasn't that hard.
No?
Really? No, it wasn't that hard. No, especially after meeting him, you know, it was like, oh, okay, I get it. Mm-hmm. I get it.
And so we took her along. So she went to, we did a college tour to
Ohio.
Ohio. We did a college tour to UC, to Santa Cruz, and then we did a side trip to Vegas.
So one of the things we did that when we first met, Christina had a book called The Hard Questions, and it's a book of about 100 questions mm-hmm. that we would get together about once a week over tea, and we would take turns asking each other these hard questions that may not necessarily come up in early conversations when you're dating. And so it kind of helped us break through some barriers to get even better look at what we were dealing with in relationship. And I think it helped us along.
Originally, I thought it would be cool to go through the book, but the other reason I brought the book was because we would have these long periods of silence. I mean, Martha's an introvert. I'm kind of an introvert. And so we would have these long periods of where we would just be, and I was sitting kind of in silence. And it felt like, God, we should be talking about something, but what? And so when I brought the book along, I said, I brought this book. You know, I'd had it on my shelf forever. And we started like just going through the questions, and some of them didn't apply at the time, and so they were really easy to answer. Like if we were to go back through the book now, there would probably be some questions that would be harder to answer now, and some that would be easier.
Can you think of one question that's in this book? Because I've never heard of this book before.
it just gave you like all kinds of scenarios about, and I mean, there would probably be ones in there, if you're a question in there about, do you want children? If you had children, you know, would you allow your children to want your children to go to public school or private school? Would you allow your children to stay overnight with their grandparents? You know, and they, it was all broken down into sections like family and
money
and work.
Communication.
Yeah. Communication. It was all kinds of things. And they got, I mean, the questions got more intense than that, but there would be a lot of things like that, you know. I think it helped keep conversation going, and it gave us something to focus on.
The book helped, and then traveling together helped as well. So when we would go and tour these campuses, you know, we were with Brent and maybe a friend of his, and either flying or driving, you know, road trips, and it, you get to know people when you're in a car for several hours.
All the way to Vegas, or, you know.
There must have been some connection for you to go on trips so soon.
I mean, there was a connection.
Yeah. There was a connection.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It was, and I think there was an organic way that it all just kind of fell into place.
Martha's the partner I've always wanted. I mean, because Martha's the epitome of a partner in that she pitches in with whatever's happening. I mean, Martha became my partner in family and in relationship and in family with my son, in family with my parents. There was something happening. If there's a project going on, Martha's going to help with it.
Wasn't on the sidelines watching.
Right.
Yeah, she participated.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I wanted her to go so that she could, so I didn't have to come back and tell her about it. Right. I mean, you just get to go and experience it and be a part of it and be in it, as opposed to coming back and say, oh, well, we did this and we did that. That's just like one layer, you know, one dimensional explanation of what really happened. But when you're there, then you have all of this history that you can laugh about later, whether it was, we've had some trips that had some harsh things, harsh moments and stuff, but now we can, it's like part of our history, and it's part of our, something we can laugh about, you know, and go, oh my God, you remember that trip? That was a trip from hell, you know, kind of thing.
I'm curious about your different personalities, because I heard several things. Martha, you like the organized one, you like to iron your shirt, and you're the sweats wearing one, Christina. Yeah. So tell us a little bit more about that.
I was living alone when I met Christina and Brent, and you know, I was a little sort of set in my ways, very sort of meticulous about my surroundings and my environment and my dress. And I mean, I ironed everything. I used to iron my gym clothes before I went to the gym. I mean, it was that kind of thing.
Are you from the South?
No.
Okay, just checking.
So then when I met Christina and Bren and started hanging out in their environment, it was a different kind of, it was a little more loose and relaxed, and you know, so
it was
I don't think I've picked up an iron in 3.5 years.
No.
So yeah. You know,
Do you miss it?
I don't miss it. No, I don't. And it's an interesting thing. And so I think, you know, in relationship, there's a lot of sort of negotiating and balancing out each other. And, you know, you give up some things and you take on some things. And I think we've both learned how to do that. And Brent's away from college, but he was just home, you know, for a couple
of
weeks.
Which adds a whole nother layer.
It's a whole nother layer. So, you know, then there's three of us, you know, cohabitating. So it's just an interesting thing, relationship, especially if there's a son or a child involved, where, you know, there's just some give and take. And the iron sits on the shelf, and I think I did bring it down one day, but it was the first time I had used it, like I said, in about 3.5 years.
In her house where she lived when I met her, the ironing board was a fixture. It was up all the time with the iron on it. I mean, she had a special, I mean, the second bedroom was the room that she did that in.
The dedicated ironing room.
Right. It's funny, but.
That is funny.
So how did you get to move her to your side a little bit?
Well, I think we just wore her down, actually. I think that's probably the truth of it. I mean, you can't fight the ocean, you know, I just can't. So I think in some ways that's absolutely what happened. And on the other side, I mean, I am an organized person at heart in a lot of ways, and I am a perfectionist in a lot of ways. But when you're a mom and you're a single mom and you're a working single mom, you have to let some things slide. You know, you just do. And you choose your battles, and ironing or maybe getting the dishes done every day was not one of those battles, you know, because we'd let that go to go do something fun together or something. So there's certain things that Martha's not willing to, you know, or doesn't like to see go. Like she likes the sink to be empty at night, you know, to make sure that when you wake up in the morning, you don't see a dirty sink. And
Diana's giving Martha a high five.
High five, Martha. So
with you, Christina.
I work hard. We work hard and to make sure that happens, you know. And when Brent's home, you know, we've gotten where he's, you know, it's retraining him as well, right? And which isn't a bad thing, you know, for him to learn. And like when he was home this time, he actually was great.
He is trainable.
He is trainable. It's the truth.
That's the good news.
That's good. Good.
And the other thing we did early on was we did the AIDS life cycle ride, and it required training every week for 9 months.
We trained, yeah, because we didn't even own bikes whenever
we registered for the event. Our senior minister Edward had just done the ride with his partner, and he came back all excited, and we decided to register. And actually, I registered, and I called Christine, and I said, you know, I registered for this ride, you know. So she registered. Then we had to go buy bikes,
I actually had a loaner bike the first year. There's a organization that loans bikes to people that want to do charity rides and can't afford to buy a bike, Bicycle Angels. So they loaned me a bike, and that was the bike I used to ride the whole first year.
The first ride we went on, we found some skateboard helmets in her basement, and that's what we were wearing on our ride. We were that new.
We were that green.
And we did the ride, and it was very successful, and it was, you know, it's an endurance ride, so you're sleeping in tents, and you're riding, you know, you're on your bike 10, 12 hours in a day. And it takes that long, you know, for an 85-mile ride.
Well, you learn a lot about a person. You learn a lot about a person.
You know, we were 24/7.
When you're even in the beginning training phases, like remember when we did the day that we rode on the bike trail through Grayton, and we were riding to Andy's Market, and I said, just follow the signs. And I'm at Andy's Market. I'm like, where are you? She's like so mad at me. She was so mad. And that was the first time I realized that I call her a chicken. She can peck the same ground and it looks new all the time. She's directionally challenged. She couldn't figure that out. And I had basically left her in the dust.
So we did it the first year, and then the second year, we were 11 miles from the finish line, and we were riding through a residential area. The street was a little bit more narrow. I was right behind Christina, and a car door opened up right into her and caused quite a lot of damage with her clavicle and the bicep tendon and some other soft tissue there. So she's had two surgeries since then, and we've spent the last 18 months healing and recovering from that trauma. We haven't been back on our bikes. We think that we may do the AIDS Life Cycle ride again at some point. A lot of the hobbies that we were involved in, we were on a bowling league, we were dancing every week, just came to a screeching halt,
right?
Because she did not have the body parts to do that. So we've been through a lot of changes since then, and quite a lot of loss, and have really sort of been grieving about that as well, because our lives have been changed as a result of it. Now she's probably, 99% healed now, so she's come, you know, full circle.
My question for you is, if you had it to do over again, knowing what we know now, would we do it over?
No, I wouldn't.
You wouldn't?
No.
Oh, see, I would.
No.
If I, knowing what I know now, I would still do it again.
You would not do, let's get clear. What wouldn't you do again?
My question for her was, if we knew that I was going to be injured, if we did the AIDS life cycle, you know, that I was going to be injured, would we, if we knew that in retrospect, would we go back and do the same thing over? And she said she would not. I would. Actually, I kind of feel like that a different layer of intimacy happened with all of the injury and all of, from both the rides, but the injury in particular, it challenged us in a different way. And we got a lot closer, I think.
Yeah, it was a lot. I think it was a lot for me because I was the person there helping her. I was right behind her. I saw it happen. I had to call out for someone to call 911. The ambulance came, took her away. I was calling her mother to let her know what happened. I was the one having to get her from Los Angeles back to San Francisco and trying to figure out how I was going to make that happen. So it was a lot. So I would not choose to repeat that. I know some gifts and some healing came as a result of that, but it was a bit much.
Well, we would love to hear more about the whole thing, but unfortunately, we're at the end of our show, and you've ended with a very interesting phenomenon about would you do it over again, and one of you said yes and one of you said no, and I'm wondering if you could link that into words of wisdom for our audience or not. Maybe you have other words of wisdom you'd like to impart on us.
I think I would say that, especially in relationship, I think it serves us when we lean into the challenges rather than shying away or turning away from them, and that there is value and there are gifts there. And leaning into family is another thing that I think has served us over the past 4 years.
I think I have to agree with you. Yeah, I wouldn't change anything. The leaning in, both of the AIDS rights, the challenges that we've faced all along the way, the challenges that we had when we did the AIDS ride. I mean, that's why what was so attractive about us doing it over is how challenging it was. And that's when we shine, is when we find something where we lean into each other and we're equally yoked and grooved in, working towards a common cause. That's when we shine the brightest together. I think for me, that's the advice. Lean in, you know, lean in hard into your partner. And know that they're leaning back.
And I just want to say thank you for having us on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. It's been a great experience.
Oh, you're so welcome.
Wonderful. Thank
I'm
you.
I'm just
both.
Trying to ingest what you just said about lean into lean your partner in. And lean in, and your partner will lean back. Mm-hmm. It's just so beautiful.
Mm-hmm. And that there's the hard times, good times, and you're leaning in and you're working it together, mm-hmm. you know, and if you stick it out, good things can happen. Seems like.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
We want to thank you so much for being on our show, both of you, Christina and Martha. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we want everyone to remember, like Martha and Christina, you too can be living proof that through sharing your story, you can support others in being free and living their lives authentically. It's another way to help the world. This is Diana and Sheridan, and we'll be back next month. Until then,
good night.